Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us, and welcome into Taking You to School. We've been off for a very, very lengthy offseason, but we're back to talk hoops early on in the college and pro basketball season, but never too early for us. I'm your host, Joe Perillo of SuiteSports.com. That's S-U-I-T-E, Sports.com. Why don't you check us out? We got a lot of football stuff on there, but as the, you know, as the year progresses, we're going to get a little bit more basketball up. And the guy that's going to be doing most of our basketball is our editor-in-chief, our fearless leader. He writes for several blogs in the ESPN True Hoop Network. He writes for Hickory Height, which I believe was just bought by USA Today or acquired by USA Today in some fashion. That's Jeremy Conlin. Jeremy, why don't you kind of let me in on that. What is the deal with the blog you're writing for? It's USA Today now owns it?
I'm not completely sure on the details about it, but it's affiliated with USA Today in some fashion, and a lot of our stuff has been posted on the USA Today Sports main page, which has been nice, and we've been getting traffic from there. So we're excited about the connection there. So we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, for sports, a pretty good affiliation to have. The USA Today Sports, we always talk about their sports section is great, and I don't really see any other reason to read them. But what can you do? Also joining us, as always, from last year. He's the editor of RoundBallDaily.com, one of the better hoops blogs on the net. Also does some local news. I know you've been doing a lot of local high school football, Kels. Mr. Kels Dayton. Kels, are you ready to kind of transition out of football mode and get back to the hardwood?
Always ready to get back to the hardwood, Joe. It's always always on my mind, like Carolina, like James Taylor.
Indeed. Is your high school football season just about wrapped up now?
We've got a couple weeks left, so I have a couple weeks of top plays that I have to put together. But pretty much wrapped up, and we know which teams are in the state playoffs. And looking forward to that over on SportsEdge.com, sports with a Z, if you want to check that out.
All of our alternate spellings. We got Sweet Sports with a UI. We got Sports Edge with a Z. We're just so trendy here. We're very internet age. guys, I guess we'll start with. You know, we'll start with college basketball, as we used to be an exclusively college basketball show, and we started inching more and more. We started using some NBA draft stuff, and we started talking a little NBA. Now we're pretty much just basketball in general. But I do want to start with the freshman phenoms that are kind of taking over the country right now. It seems like every year there's a couple big-time freshmen, but this year even more so with guys that are being viewed as not only, you know, instant impact guys at the college level, but as players that you could potentially build an NBA franchise around. Obviously, Andrew Wiggins being the one that's, you know, been talked about as the best prospect since LeBron, but Jabari Parker, guys like Randall, obviously just a ton of talent right now. Pick a guy at Kentucky, any of the freshmen, they're all very, very talented. And I want to go to you first because you're kind of more of our college guy, and I know you got to watch that Duke-Kansas game. But kind of tell me which freshman has kind of stood out that you think this year will be the best player in college basketball?
Yeah, Joe. Well, I think Jabari Parker has really stood out so far. I think looking at both guys, I know Parker was the guy on the Sports Illustrated cover at first when you talk about last year it was Sports Illustrated, and then they kind of went to Wiggins. All the attention went to him. He's kind of on all the magazine covers. But I think Parker reminded everyone why they thought he was maybe the best high school player since LeBron. When he was coming out of high school, he really looked great. I think he's got the size of an NBA small forward, can play the power forward down low in college, has some good post moves, and he's got a jump shot, obviously, a really smooth jump shot. Just one of the best strokes I've seen in college from a freshman coming right in. And I think he looked outstanding. I mean, even though Wiggins and Kansas got the win, Wiggins had kind of a quiet 22 points in that game, but Parker really stood out. I think in terms of the better player in that game, I think he had 21 in the first half. He was outstanding in that game, so he really caught my eye. And I think it's going to be interesting because when you look at Wiggins, and this was the first chance we've gotten to see him on a college level, physically he's kind of skinny. Parker kind of looks like he's more filled out, looks like he's more ready for the NBA right now. So I think Parker was more impressive to me in that game, even though Wiggins' team got the W.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of people were feeling that way, and Jabari Parker was, you mentioned that he was kind of the phenom before Wiggins became the phenom and the talked about guy, and we were kind of talking about him as like a mini LeBron, something like that. Wiggins had that, I believe, that crazy dunk highlight reel when he was like in 7th or 8th grade that went viral and went crazy. Then Parker was being talked about as the big-time guy, and then it kind of went back to Wiggins. So this freshman class obviously just loaded with talent at the top. Jeremy, I don't know if you've gotten a chance to really sit down and watch any of these guys, and also to feel free to talk about any of the guys from Kentucky. Their outstanding freshman class they've got coming in, maybe a Fab Five remake. Kind of who has stood out to you this year, and not just for you know, who's going to be the best college player, but when you're projecting long term, who impresses you the most right now?
Well, to piggyback on what Kill said, I definitely thought Parker. So like in the Champions Classic, which was Kansas, Duke, and then Kentucky and Michigan State, there were about, like, you know, 10 of those guys are probably going to be lottery picks at some point over the next 3 years. But I thought Parker was the one that looked the best. And like Kel said, he definitely has the most NBA-ready body. Like, he's physically superior to Wiggins and Randall right now. But if I was going to be, you know, sort of the turd in the punch bowl, there were all these comparisons to LeBron, but it doesn't seem like he has the same passing skills that LeBron had at that age. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say that that's going to prevent him from becoming a great player. Like, he's going to be a top three pick this year, and he's probably going to be a multiple-time All-Star. But the LeBron comparisons, like, he doesn't have, like, the outrageous athleticism. That was, like, always, you know, that was a given from the get-go. Everybody talked about his passing being on an elite level, but he hasn't really shown that so far. Like, he had his season high in assists is 4, but that was in 19 minutes against UNC Asheville. So maybe as the season gets going and he starts to get used to this team that he's on, maybe that starts to pick up. But, I mean, in that Kansas game, he only had 1 assist, but he had a great scoring game. He was 9 of 18 from the floor, scored 27 points. So that's one thing that I'm going to keep an eye on going forward, is if he can develop that passing. And then Wiggins looked great. He's a really fluid athlete, but he doesn't really have the NBA body yet. He's sort of like Kevin Durant in that he's really, really skinny now, and he needs to flesh out a little bit. The guy that I was most impressed by in the early game was Julius Randle. He had a 27-15, something like that, and had a huge second half. His post moves are actually pretty good for a college freshman, and they're going to get better, not because he's going to develop, but because it's easier to post up in the NBA than it is in college because of the way the floor is set up. The free throw lane is wider, so it's harder to double from across the lane. Obviously the three-point line is further, so it's tougher for guys to pinch down on you. So there's going to be more space for him to operate once he's in the NBA. And, like, you know, if he can keep developing his post game, he's sort of a throwback player in that. Like, he's a really good face-up drive-to-the-basket guy, but he also has legitimate post moves, which we haven't really seen from a college freshman in a while.
Yeah, you don't really see that too much in the college game. Even the elite big men that come out, we always talk about as that being kind of the thing they need to do, and that their offense needs to catch up to their defense. Those always seem to be the buzzwords around even the better big man prospects. You talked about Julius Randle. We'll get to the team that actually beat Kentucky in that game. Michigan State now number 1 in the polls. Hit to them in a second. Wanted to touch on Jabari Parker. Yeah, I mean, LeBron James was a passing savant at that age. It's just I always feel like comparing LeBron to compare him to Jordan, which isn't fair, and then to compare these kids to LeBron, it always seems like just a real tough deal for that next generation, because we always just point out what they couldn't do that the guy before them could. Touching on Wiggins, not an NBA body. I think most people kind of knew that coming in, but, I mean, does Kevin Durant have an NBA body yet? I don't think so, and he's – So quite a player and arguably the best pure scorer in basketball right now. Getting to Michigan State, they scored that close win over Kentucky in the Champions Classic, and they're led by Gary Harris, the sophomore shooting guard. They're looking really good. They don't have one of those maybe just overwhelming guys like a Randall or a Wiggins or a Parker like some of these other teams have. Kels, I'll go to you. They kind of look like your traditional, they're going to win games. Like, they beat Kentucky 78-74. They're going to win, you know, 62-50. those kind of games. They play great defense. I want to talk specifically about the changes in the rules in college, this hand check rule that a lot of there's been a lot more fouls called, quite frankly, throughout college basketball in the first week. It's made the games kind of hard to watch at some point. Hopefully it'll change as players and coaches get adjusted. Can Michigan State win with that style? And they're the first Michigan State team to be ranked number one since Tom Izzo won the national championship in 2001 with Mateen Khalid and company. Can Michigan State playing that style and in the Big Ten, are they right now, are they the best team in the country? And do you see them as a legitimate? I mean, I think we have to say they're a national title favorite. As a team you would look at as one of the favorites.
Right. Well, I would look at them as one of the favorites, definitely. I think the thing about the style, I think everyone's going to get adjusted to the new rules and everything.
Yeah.
It's been crazy when you look at the scoring. I mean, some teams are putting up 100-plus points, which we never see in college because of all these free throws. But I think when you look at Michigan State, like you said, the inside with Adrian Payne, Gary Harris. So I think you take a look at them. They have the talent. They have more – not as much talent when you talk about young talent, like teams like Kentucky and Kansas have and Duke. But I think they have the talent and experience that college teams need. Mm-hmm. I think when you look at some of these teams, 2012 Kentucky was kind of an anomaly because they had five freshmen and they were able to go on and win the championship. But a lot of times experience in college basketball wins just because of the style of play and everything that happens in the tournament once you get in there. Playing team basketball wins, and that's what Tom Izzo does so well is his teams play so well together. They play so much better when you get to March. I think you were saying before about the fact that we've never seen Michigan State be ranked this high early in the season, basically since Mateen Cleaves was there, basically back in those days with Morris Peterson then. So I think now you're taking a look at Michigan State, and it's interesting to see them back up there, but I think the way that they improve over the course of the season, I think they'll be right there in the end, and I really like their team. I think they've got a solid team. I know Columbia almost beat them the other night, but I think they'll continue to get better, and I think they will be right there at the end.
Yeah, you mentioned Adrian Payne, a guy I didn't even touch on. Maybe their best player, great interior player. He's kind of that inside to Gary Harris's outside. I think he's averaging over 17 points. He's going to be a 15-8 kind of guy all year for him. Gary Harris is going to get, as they kind of move on, he's going to be probably a 20-point scorer for him. Keith Appling, running that offense, experienced guy, knows how to get his teammates involved. And then the one guy that I always talk about with them that, gets kind of lost in the shuffle because they got so many scorers is Brandon Dawson. I mean, that guy's energy. I mean, he kind of rubs some people the wrong way, kind of has gotten kind of this, dirty player kind of moniker attached to him. But he's an energy guy. I mean, I think he's leading them in rebounding right now. He hits the glass hard, especially the offensive glass, gets him a lot of second-chance opportunities. Tom Izzo teams, they're generally better in the tournament than they are in the regular season. So this is a little bit of a role reversal for us to see them ranked number one right now. And it really just shows you how much respect people have for the Big Ten, which wasn't the case a couple of years ago. I think it would have been impossible for even a team this talented to be ranked number one. Jeremy, we'll kind of close out college basketball with you. I know Michigan State's ranked number one, but Kentucky seems to be the most talented team in the country. They're going to grow into it, obviously. They only lost to Michigan State by four, so it's not like they're, that much worse. Kansas, suddenly they're a super young, super talented team, which kind of hasn't been the MO under Bill Self. North Carolina, they've got some problems. We're not even going to get into them. But Duke looks really, really good as well. Who do you think is the best team in the country right now? Not based on resume, because I think you'd have to say Michigan State, but who the team you look at with their talent that you'd be most afraid to play right now?
Well, the thing with Michigan State is I actually think the new rules are going to be a big advantage to them because
mm-hmm. –
like, especially in the Big Ten with, like, all the physical defense that's played there, as opposed to the Pac-12 and the Big 12, which are more, like, wide-open styles. The Big Ten's, like, a really, really physical league. So I feel like there's going to be more of these, like, sort of hand-checky type fouls called in the Big Ten. And when you have a guy in the perimeter like Gary Harris that's such a good creator with the ball, that's going to be in a position to draw all those fouls. Like, I think that's going to be a leg up for them compared to teams like Michigan and Ohio State that don't really have that central guy that always has the ball and can really attack the basket. So I think that's going to be a big leg up for them. at least in the beginning of the conference season. You know, by the time March rolls around, maybe everybody's adjusted, and maybe that's when Kentucky starts to rise above, just because it seems like they have the most talent. But, you know, at least early in the season, I think Michigan State's going to be the toughest team to beat, because as you're still adjusting to these new rules, they're in a position to take advantage of them.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. In the Big Ten, they're the one team in the Big Ten that seems to have two different guys that can really create offense on their own. And like I said, a real energy guy like Brandon Dawson. You know, Wisconsin's got to hate this new rule, because that's all Wisconsin did. You know, they just hand-check you to death and bump you to death and win the game 50-48. So this rule was pretty much specifically designed to make Wisconsin not good. So we'll see what Bo Ryan can do. He always seems to find a way to get the Badgers to be a very, very competitive team and a, you know, a Sweet 16 Elite Eight kind of team. We'll move on to the NBA. And Jeremy, I know you wanted to talk about some teams that had kind of disappointed you in the early goings. A lot of teams in the Eastern Conference that we thought might rise up and make the playoffs and be not only in the playoffs, but fun to watch, teams like Cleveland, teams like Washington. And then there's teams like Brooklyn who are just old and not healthy right now and kind of struggling to get their feet underneath them. When you look at the Eastern Conference, which team has kind of disappointed you the most? And which team do you think maybe this is what we're going to get? Maybe we should already be saying, oh, wow, you know, they're just not as good as we thought. And then which team, you know, is it just growing pains?
Well, I mean, the crazy thing about it is, like, at the same time that, you know, so we all sort of expected the top six in the East to be in some order. You know, obviously the Heat, the Pacers, the Bulls. But then the Hawks, the Knicks, and the Nets were all sort of expected to be there. But now the Knicks and Nets have sort of dropped out, but no one's really taken their spot. Because, like, all those other fringe teams like the Cavs and the Wizards and the Pistons, they're at the bottom of the conference too. And the teams that are sort of rising up are Philly and Charlotte, which nobody saw coming. And I don't think that's going to sustain either. So, like, there's a real jumble at the bottom there. And, you know, like you mentioned Brooklyn, and this is something that just clicked in my head, you know, 2 hours ago this morning. Like, we're expecting them to be this 50-win team. But the guys that they brought in, Garnett and Pierce and Terry, like, they were the best guys on a team that was 41-41 last year. Like, it's not like the Celtics were a juggernaut and then they brought in the core of the Celtics. Like, they brought in the core of a 500 team. And it's not like the rest of Brooklyn is much better than the rest of what Boston was last year. So I'm not sure if Brooklyn is, you know, maybe this isn't growing pains. Maybe they're just not going to be that good. Maybe they're only going to be a 500 team like the Celtics were last year. But, I mean, if I was going to look at one team, like, obviously there's going to be now a void at the bottom of the Eastern Conference bracket. So if I was going to look at one team, like, it's tough to pick any of these out because it all seems like they have so many flaws. Detroit's defense I thought was going to be good. It's terrible. Washington's offense I thought was going to be better because they had Wall healthy, and it's been terrible. You know, Cleveland, it seems like they're the ones that have the highest ceiling right now because they're, you know, they've been struggling because Bynum's been out and Kyrie Irving hasn't played well, and I expect those two things to change. I think Bynum's going to get healthier as the season goes on, and I think Irving's going to start actually making jump shots for a change. So, I mean, that's the team that I would look to step up and maybe get as high as the fifth seed in the East. But, you know, right now it's like it looks like all these teams are terrible, and they, you know, we might end up with two teams in the East that make the playoffs with losing records.
Yeah, it certainly seems like it could be that way. Kels, I'll let you jump in on this. Look at the Eastern Conference. Look at teams like Detroit, Washington, Cleveland. I mean, is there a reason for optimism on any of those teams right now?
Well, I remember having this conversation back in the summer, Joe, and I just wasn't high on the Wizards. I know everyone else was. But they just suck. I mean, they're just terrible. They're a terrible team. They're still so young. I mean, it's just like John Wall, I understand him coming back, but offensively they have no idea what they're doing out there. They're not great defensively either. And then I think Cleveland, like I would have expected them to be much better than they are so far. I thought Kyrie was going to kind of take that next step. And I thought the addition of Bynum, obviously, he would have helped out. He's been hurt, obviously. But you look at Varejao coming back. Waiters, I thought, you know, was going to take that next step as well and make them into a, you know, playoff team. And with everyone else struggling, you would have thought they might have been that team that would have stepped up and been that fourth seed or fifth seed, like Jeremy said. And then when you look at the Nets, I mean, they're basically this year's Lakers of last year when you look at it, because like Jeremy said, obviously Garnett and Pierce from a 41-41 team last year, another year older. Paul Pierce looks like he's got nothing left. I mean, he's just throwing terrible passes. He looks like he should be playing in the YMCA right now, not the NBA. And he's just been horrible so far this year. He's been god-awful. Just looks like he should probably just hang it up right now. But I think the reason why people thought that they were going to be that championship-caliber team or maybe the next level down was because of the fact that you still have Joe Johnson, but he's just been a dog so far this year. He just plays with no heart. I've seen him. He does not take over in games. Just doesn't have that killer instinct, that mentality. And obviously Darren Williams has been hurt. Brooke Lopez has been hurt. But those two guys, you would have thought that, you know, they would at least play at the level that they played at last year. And you would have thought maybe Paul Pierce can add some crunch time, you know, buckets, a guy to go to down the stretch. But it just hasn't been the case. Sean Livingston's basically been their best player so far. So, I mean, those three teams, obviously very disappointing. And I don't know who's going to take their spot. At this point, I would expect, as Jeremy said, the Cavs to move back up there. But everyone's playing so poorly in the East. I think we should just take another playoff team from the West and put them in the East, because I think we'd have better basketball come springtime. So.
Yeah, well, you know, there's been a lot of years where that's been the case. So this isn't really anything new. Let's move over to the West a little bit. And, Jeremy, you threw a stat at me before we got on the air. That was the Clippers right now have the second-best offense but the second-worst defense. And it's kind of like, well, can they keep this offensive tear going? And they had a minor scare we were watching the other night with Blake Griffin. We thought he was seriously injured. And then he came back onto the floor and threw down a couple highlight reel dunks and kind of was like, I guess he's fine. That could be Blake Griffin. So they have that. Their offense is really humming right now. Chris Paul just – you know, being Chris Paul, doing Chris Paul-y things. But again, the defense is not so great. Kind of, do you expect this offensive tear to continue? Do you expect them to still be one of the, if not the best offensive team in the league, but an elite offense that can just win shootouts? And do you expect the defense to get any better? Just kind of where do you think the Clippers are going to end? Are they the favorites in the West right now? I'll throw that out at you.
Well, I wouldn't say that they're the favorites in the West. I think just there's too many teams that seem to be on the same level to call any of them the favorites would be a little bit unfair. I do think the Clippers' offense is going to stay this good all year. It might even become better because if you look at the players individually, like Chris Paul's only shooting 24% from three, J.J. Redick's only shooting 37% from three, Jared Dudley's only shooting 32% from three. So I think those numbers are going to get closer to 40 or even above 40 in the case of Redick as the season goes on. So their offense could be even more efficient by the end of the season. So I definitely think they're going to be a team that at the very least can win shootouts like, you know, the old Suns teams from like 2005 to 2008. The worrisome thing is not only are they second to last in defense, but their starting unit is actually defending at a top 10 level. It's just that their bench, whenever a single bench player is on the floor, their defensive rating is the equivalent of the worst in the history of the league. It's like unexplainably bad, or not unexplainably bad because they have Byron Mullins on the bench, but it's really incredibly bad. And I'm not sure what the fix is because it's not like they can, they don't really have assets to trade anymore because they already traded Bledsoe to get Redick and Dudley. And they don't. There's no real free agent out there that's going to come in and fix their backline defense. Like there've been talks about them maybe signing Lamar Odom, but he's been a head case ever since he left the team last year. It doesn't seem like there's any personnel fixes out there. The hope that they're going to have to hang their hat on is that Doc Rivers can sort of manufacture a defense out of the parts that he has. And I mean, there was a friend of mine, Jared Dubin, wrote a piece for Grantland over the summer about this is a really interesting test case over what matters on defense. Is it personnel or is it the scheme? Because if it's the scheme, then it seems like Doc Rivers should be able to put together a good defense here. But if it's personnel that really matters, they don't have any, you know, seriously good defender other than Chris Paul, and he's their point guard, and point guard defense doesn't really matter that much. you know, DeAndre Jordan has all the physical tools, but he's out of position a lot. So if Rivers can sort of get through to him and be like, this is where you need to be, and sort of really be hands-on in teaching him how to be an NBA center on defense, that's, you know, when they can start to creep up back towards, you know, top 15 defense. I don't think they're going to be an elite defense, but for right now, it seems like they're going to be in a team. They're going to be a team that's going to be a lot of games that are, you know, 121 to 116, like the game that they had against Houston or Golden State. Those games were really high scoring. So it seems like that's going to be the team they're going to be for now.
Yeah, and you mentioned Doc Rivers, obviously a guy that's known for his ability to coach up a defense and build a defense. So this will be interesting. I think the hope was that he would take, you know, the athleticism that the Clippers have and turn them into one that can translate that on the defensive end. Kels, do you think this is a team that can have it, not, you know, like Jeremy said, not an elite defense, but a defense capable of carrying them to a championship with as good as their offense is?
Yeah, I think one of the things that is going to determine that, like Jeremy said, is how DeAndre Jordan can play, because I think Doc Rivers mentioned when he got there that he wanted him to be an elite defensive player. And it hasn't happened really so far, but obviously it's still early in the season, so I think they do have the tools. I think personnel-wise, like Jeremy said, not great, but, you know, when you look at the system and you look at the way the Celtics played defense and the way they focused on it and paid attention to it, it really paid dividends in the playoffs. And I think this year in the West, when you look at the Grizzlies, I mean, that's been their foil the last couple of years, the Clippers, and Memphis is not as good. I know they just beat them last night, but Memphis can't score. So I don't think the Grizzlies are going to be there like they were last year. I don't think they should have fired Lionel Hollins, because I think he was great for that team. But so I think the Clippers are going to have less teams to go through, and they do look pretty good. I mean, they just lost their first home game last night. I think they could compile a record over the course of the regular season that maybe gets them, you know, a number one seed or a number two seed. And then from there, I think in the playoffs, if they can win at home, it's going to be interesting to see how far they can go. And I think there's less teams out there that have more talent than they do. I think they can put it together if they buy in defensively. I think they can be a team that gets to the NBA Finals.
Yeah, and there's certainly a trendy pick right now. All right, guys, we're running out of time. That's all the time we've got for you. Thank you so much, everyone at home, for joining us in our new time slot every Tuesday at noon. Thank you for tuning in to Taking You to School. Once again, I'm Joe Ferrello of SweetSports.com. For Kels Bateman and Jeremy Conlon, we'll see you next week, everyone.